The following is a production of Omnis.tv.
On this episode of Revelator, I welcome special music guest Russ Dwarf, and also I'll welcome Thomas Flowers from Oleander. It's a double feature night here on Revelator.
Enjoy the show.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Revelator. I'm your host, Ryan. And I tell you what, I've got an awesome show for you this evening. Russ Dwarf is going to be joining us, founder of the Killer Dwarfs. Also, Thomas Flowers from Oleander will be joining us a little later. So definitely stick around for that, playing cuts off their new album. And I tell you what, man, if you like rock and roll music, tonight is the night for you. There's no doubt about it. All I got to say is...
Kapuya.
Tell you what, let's get things going. Russ Dwarf is going to join us, but before, let's take a listen to his single. This is one of the first title tracks off of the album Wireless. It's called Keep the Spirit Alive here on Revelator.
My trip, 'cause you only get one glance in this crazy game of chance.
Why you'll never be the same.
you're bringing. Keep that spirit alive. No. Gotta keep it alive, Gotta try to survive. Keep it alive. Gotta keep that spirit, baby.
That is Russ Dworf, Keep the Spirit Alive, here on Revelator. And I welcome to the show at this point in time, the one and only Mr. Russ Dworf. How you doing, Russ? What's going on, man?
I'm good, Ryan. How are you, man?
I'm doing good, man. And I'm glad we let off with that track. I was talking with Rob. I believe he play bass for you as well? And I was talking with him, we talked about, how this song really just kind of jumped off for you guys when you reworked it, kind of set the tone for the album, I think, man. I mean, what was the idea behind, obviously doing this song, but also taking a lot of these Killer Dwarf songs and reworking the acoustic album? What was the perspective like on redoing some of these songs, man?
The way this came out was kind of odd. There's the guitar player that played most of the, did all the heavy lifting on this. His name's Glenn Belcher, and we're friends since we were 14 years old, so that's about 5 years ago. And we had been out playing. That was a joke in there. You're supposed to laugh. Okay. Anyways, we've been out doing acoustic shows for the last year and a half or so, and I was just basically doing stuff from all my catalog. I have a couple solo albums, and I play in a Canadian band called Moxie, and I did another album with somebody in that band, and blah, blah, blah. And I played a bunch of songs that I grew up with, like some old Cooper and Rick Derringer and just stuff I liked. And it was about a 2-hour show, and we were just doing that and having fun. And Glenn said, why don't we go in, since we had worked up some arrangements by playing the Dwarf songs acoustically. And he said, let's go in the studio and basically try to just record this live off the floor. Because we had a really good chemistry doing it live. And so live off the floor took 9 months. Because we started having a lot of fun with it, and we brought a lot of friends into play, and basically I ate Chinese food and drank a lot of Sapporo, and those guys did a lot of work. Another friend of mine, Rob, obviously he's my partner, business partner, and he sings on it and plays on it, and him and I and Glenn and Fred Duvall, who produced it with Glenn, is an engineer, and I've worked with him for over 30 years, and we just had a lot of fun, and we just brought a lot of friends in to play on it, and we just, had a lot of laughs. And honestly, those guys did so much work on this thing, and I was just, being myself or whatever. But I wasn't really thinking, oh, this is going to be like unbelievable and blah blah blah, because I've sang these songs so many times, and they're such a part of my life. And it turned out really well, and the response has been unbelievable. I'm like absolutely shocked. To tell you the truth, but hey, shows to go, yeah.
Well, I guess my first thing is are you a General Tso's or an Orange Peel Chicken guy as far as Chinese food is concerned?
Well, we just have like the classic Canadian Chinese food, chicken ball and fried rice and shrimp and whatever. it was very odd though, because we would order from this place, and the studio's like, it's in an odd place. It's like a bunker, and it's way off the beaten path. And we would order from this little town, and they would come, and they wouldn't bring any soy sauce. This happened over and over again. It got to be unbelievable. So that made me go into a crazy rage, and I would smash everything and stuff like that. But that's another
story. I want soy sauce now. But seriously, man, the Wireless is I've heard a lot of people say this is right up there with Album of the Year, one of their albums for Album of the Year 2013. And I agree, man. When I first heard it, I was instantly hooked, man. And I let my wife hear it, and she was like, man, and she's like, who is this? I was like, I kind of gave her the backstory, and she's like, I really, really dig the voice. Like, you have a great voice, man. It's obviously held up over time. And the songs, it just shows that music is really timeless, man. And offering a new perspective on these songs, I think, was really ingenious. It may not have seemed like it at the time, man, but it really is.
Well, I appreciate that. And I think, you know, like I said, they're such a huge part of my life and they mean something to me. And it's nice that they mean something to other people, too. You know, it's only rock and roll. It's not like I have the cure to cancer here or anything. But, you know, it does make people feel good. And that makes me feel good that they're digging it, too. You know, and it's fun to still sing these songs after 25 years.
No, I mean, I think, you know, more people are going to hear it, the more they're going to like it. I mean, the songs, you could definitely tell these songs were written to, you know, there's some meaning behind them. This isn't your cookie cutter, Justin Bieber. You know what I mean? This isn't trash.
Hey,
you know,
he's a Canadian boy.
I'm sorry, man. We pick on the Biebs quite a bit, man. So
yeah, I know who doesn't at this point. Once puberty sets in, it's going to be ugly. But him and that monkey are getting married. That's what I heard. You can get married to a monkey in Canada.
He had a little monkey. He sent him to the country, man.
I've lost my train of thought now, you crazy American dudes.
What was the question?
Cool. Do I win any money? That's all I want to know.
Now, you also announced that you're working with Twisted Nail Productions, re-releasing a Killer Dwarfs album, Start at One. This is an album that was done and was never released. You recorded this in 93, is that right?
That's correct. It was after we were out of the deal with Epic, and, you know, 1993, music changed, and it was more of a Seattle thing, and, you know, Pearl Jam and Nirvana and stuff like that. So, you know, heavy metal, or what we classified heavy metal, is at the time, you know, it had its day and everything. And but we went in and we recorded this record, and it's been sitting there for the last 20 years. And I don't know, for some reason, it's time for it to come out. And it's not bad. It sounds pretty good. We're trying to spruce it up a bit. We're not really touching it from its actual state that it's been in, like the time capsule there, but we're just going to enhance it slightly, you know, because the technology's changed so much. And we're in the process of writing a couple tunes, and Daryl Dwarf, he's you know, playing. We're gonna, you know, the Dwarf band is going to be the Method to the Madness band, if anybody's familiar with that last album we did with Epic. And it's Jerry Finn on guitar and Daryl on drums, and we have another bass player that did the last reunion tour with us, Stan Mychek, will be playing, and we're putting the tour together. And I think we're going to start August 31st in the U.S. and we're going to probably do 30 days down there, and that'll be the beginning of it. The album should come out at the end of August, I'm thinking at this point. So.
Yeah. Very cool, man. Obviously, we kind of touched on this a little bit. Tour coming as well. You know, obviously, you're working dates and things like that right now. Playing these songs, you know, off wireless, and, you know, playing some of the older tracks, playing obviously in front of, you know, old fans and meeting new fans. So, what has that experience been like for you? You know, playing live, and you have fans who are like, "Oh man, it's so good to hear you." And then, you know, obviously, making new fans such as myself and a lot of other people maybe are not familiar with, you know, your music from you know, in the 80s.
It's absolutely awesome after all these years. Like, I've been doing this a long time, you know, I've been doing it over 30 years, and it's fun to meet a lot of the fans that never got to see the band in its heyday and stuff, because there's, you know, I think it's sometimes like I meet younger fans in their 20s and I'm like, you know, taking a piss in the bathroom and I'm like, and they're like, "Hey man, I love your band," and I'm like, "You're like two, man. You weren't even born when I started." I'm like, "How do you know this stuff?" And it's like, "Oh, my dad's got all your records." I'm like, "How old is he?" 52. I'm 52. So it's fun that it's spanned these generations. And there's young, you know, guys like yourself, and they're all digging it. You know, it's just a fun thing. I'm so grateful for the life I have. I'm like a very lucky person. You know, I just did Monsters of Rock cruise in March, and there's people from all over the world that go on this thing, and it's shocking because, you know, a lot of these people, they've never seen me, and they're huge fans, and to get to talk to them, and it's it really, you know, it's a great feeling.
No, it's got to be Men. And I think the next song we're going to hear tonight is titled Look Around, which I think kind of parlays really kind of what we're talking about, man, where, you know, life, you're kind of in a good place, man. And talk to me about this song lyrically. You know, when you look at it, you know, obviously talking about past memories and stuff, you know, when you redid this song, did it strike up any, you know, past memories or stories you can recall, man?
Oh, absolutely. This is probably my favorite song on the Wireless album, and this was on the Method to the Madness album, and this song was basically an album track. We never did play this in a live Dwarf show, and this song came about it's you know, it's hard to go back and think exactly what happened and everything, but I do recall singing it and everything, and a good friend of ours who did a couple records with it, and he's a close friend of mine for the last like 25 years, Andy Johns, who produced these records, and unfortunately he just passed away like a month ago. And when I think of this song, you know, even, you know, like you said, it brings back a lot of memories, and it brings back even more memories now that he's gone, because I spent a lot of time. If you listen to the original version, there's like a million vocals on this thing. And we were listening to music at the time that we really loved together. We went out and bought all this Beach Boys stuff, and we were totally involved in it. And we would spend days just listening to Beach Boys in the studio, which was very odd. Well, I'm a huge fan anyways, but we were pissing away all Sony's money and listening to Beach Boys instead of working, which is great. And so when I hear this song, I think of all those the great memories I've had. And that's the great thing about music. I think, you know, you've probably heard this cliche a million times that, you know, when people hear a song, and it's like a sliver in your mind, and it brings back, you know, a great time or a feeling, or, you know, it's an awesome thing. And it, like I said, I love this tune, and I had great memories making it this time and the original time for sure.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate you sharing the story with us. And let's take a look at it right now. This is Look Around here on Revelator. Russ Dwarf.
I can't ride it anymore. What I see and what is real, yeah. Singing songs in harmony, yeah. I need that song to set me free. Maybe in a year or two you forget those things. Down if it gets too bad. Look around, I can't fight this anymore. No, it won't change a thing for me. Yeah. Yesterday's just memories. Turn around, love me gone. Maybe in a year or two you forget those things. Well, I know you. Never let it drag you down if it gets too bad. Look around when you're fading fast. Don't chase the past. Look around. If you're going down the lost and found. Look around when you're fading fast. Don't chase the
Russ Dwarf here on Revelator. That is Look Around, and we're hanging out with Russ Dwarf tonight. And hey, man, again, thanks for coming on. We appreciate your time. And I want to talk, you know, a lot of rumors have been out, and, you know, it's been kind of been out in the media a little bit about a book about your life and even a film about your life as well. So I'm curious if you have a time frame on that. And two, is there stories that you were trying to keep out of this book that are going to be in the book that you can share with us tonight?
Well, the book's going to be a pop-up book.
There you go.
It's be
color
like beer,
coordinated and everything. That's awesome.
Yeah. Stuff. I don't know. Everybody's got a book. Everybody's got a movie. I'm kind of on the fence about the whole thing. Like, you know, it's going to be fun. It is fun doing it and everything. But, like, it's hard to get excited about your own life when you're doing it. You know what I mean? Like, I could tell stories all day long, but it's a little more naked, that kind of situation. But, you know, I'm trying to get it done. Slowly but surely. Don't call me Shirley.
I mean, is there, you know, I can imagine, you know, doing a book about your life, and then there's obviously some things maybe you would like to keep out. I mean, you know, is there one particular story? You know, obviously you've been in the business a long time, have met tons of people. Most people don't listen. I mean, you hosted, you know, Headbangers Ball back in the day with Rob Halford and stuff. I mean, obviously you met tons of people, you know, up and down the road. I mean, is there one particular story that you're like, man, I really want this to be part of the book, or I want to make sure that I tell this right, you know, if we are going to have it in the book?
Well, there's a lot. It's hard to say. There's so many stories, like you said, and like if I'm sitting down with friends or we're talking or you know, people that have been there with me and stuff, and we all think of stuff. Like Daryl and I, we talk all the time, and I just saw he came to a couple of my gigs this weekend, and we just get talking, and the stuff that we remember is hilarious, and it's, you know, a lot of this stuff is, you know, it's such a hard question. I don't think it's going to be that salacious or anything. It's not going to be like, hey, I was snorting blow off of, you know, Ross Perot's arse or something like that. It ain't going to happen. You know what I mean? But it'll be just about rock and roll, I guess, and about just like, you know, guys that tried to, you know, make music for a living.
Very cool. And
speaking
of making
music,
those
are very lame answers, weren't they?
Nah, it works, man. I know it's a tough question, especially when you're in the middle of a project that big. I understand that, man. It's completely. Now, speaking of making a living in the music industry, and I want to talk to you about really the music industry as a whole. I mean, and you've been on both sides, you know, signed and then, you know, obviously released with, you know, the whole thing with Epic and Sony and so forth. And now, obviously, the way the music industry is now, a lot more. I mean, we've come across tons and tons of independent bands that are just, you know, basically did. You know, they didn't have enough middle fingers for the record industry and did their own thing and are very, very successful.
Yeah.
You know, so what is your take on the music industry right now as a whole, and where do you see it moving in the next, say, like 5 years?
Oh, well, if I was a psychic, I'd be in Vegas. But I don't know. I think, you know, it's like, obviously, it's way different than when we started because it's just word of mouth. And then, you know, in the early 80s, obviously, the music television came in, which was really helpful for us because we made some, you know, I hate that saying, back in the day, we made some classic videos that went along with the tunes that people, you know, responded to really well for us. And that really helped, you know, get us around the world internationally and stuff. But nowadays, you know, you can just sit in your house and write a song and pop it up on the internet and, you know, a million people could see it overnight. And, you know, that's a blessing and a curse because, you know, there's so much stuff out there. How do you weed through everything and find the good stuff? I guess the cream always rises to the top. But, you know, I'm glad we, you know, I was around when I was around in my own time. I can't imagine trying to survive or, like, get out there in a band and play. Like, when the Dwarf started, our main objective was going out and working and playing, and we'd play 250, 300 shows a year, you know, to learn your craft. And nowadays, I think it's like I get on TV and then I'm a superstar. I just don't think that's a solid foundation for longevity in this business because it's, you know, it's a brutal business. Like, music is the greatest thing. It's such a double-edged sword. When music is a great thing and it brings so much happiness to people, and but, you know, to actually be the artist and everything else you know, there's a lot of rejection involved, and there's a lot of, you know, and it's a very emotional thing, obviously, because these songs are like your children. And, you know, I we could talk for hours on that subject, I'm sure of it, you know what I mean? But, you know, I give kudos to anybody that tries to play in a band and you know, go out and try to make it. You know, and I'd say just believe in yourself and don't listen to what anybody else has to say, really, you know, unless they're your true pals or, you know, you have to follow your heart.
No, I think that's good advice for a lot of the younger bands, you know, trying to make their way, especially with social media and all the different avenues there are now to get out there. In a way, it's good that it's out there. But then again, you use the word saturated. And there's just so many out there. Podcasts like us here on Revelator, I mean, it, you know, works because there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of people, there's a lot of access, you know, to a lot of different bands and artists, and, you know, so it's hard. Sometimes it's hard to just filter through all the stuff, you know, like just so much out there. It's really hard to just kind of comprehend.
I can't imagine it. You know, I see it every day, and you know, just go on Facebook, and there's always something, some music. Like, there's not enough time in a lifetime to be able to check everything out.
Yeah, it's just there's so much out there, which in a way is a good thing. In a way, it's like, man, it's just. It's hard to find that, you know, the things that, you know, that kind of reach out and grab you in the chest and go, yeah, that's, these guys have it. These guys know what it's about. You know, they're making something that's meaningful as opposed to just, you know, rolling out the Pillsbury dough tube. You know what I mean?
Exactly. But there's a lot of great young bands out there carrying the rock and roll torch. And, you know, they're like, there's guys up here like Sean Kelly. He's got a book coming out. I don't know if you know Sean, but he's played with a lot of Canadian. He's a younger dude, and he's really carrying the torch for rock and roll up here. And he's written songs and played with a lot of Canadian bands, and bands like the Rival Sons. I love that band, and yes. You know, but I still love all the old stuff, like the Van Halen that came out last year. Awesome. The ZZ Top, awesome. Joe Walsh, you know, if it's good, it's going to survive, right?
Yeah, I think having you on tonight and hearing these songs is definitely evidence of that. Which brings us to one of the tracks that I told you. This is one of my favorite songs off the album Wireless, which awesome. Is Drifting Back. I mean, lyrically, musically, it's great. You brought in Bumblefoot from Guns N' Roses to work with you on this track. Talk to me about the meaning of this song for you and kind of in a nutshell, man.
Well, it's funny. Like, this song is an old, really old song. I wrote this song originally in 1984. And it's funny, when you're that young, like, I was like 23, 24 years old, so you really don't have a lot of, I think, experience and perspective on the future. And it's almost like sometimes when you write songs, they come true after 10 or 20 years. And definitely this song is about life and memories and just, you know, I don't like to actually like try to overanalyze and anything that I write like lyrically. I'd rather have people take their own interpretation of it. You know what I mean? That's kind of like what videos did. They kind of wreck some of that stuff. And I love the tune. We did it on Method to the Madness and the band worked it up and doing it on this record was amazing. And you know, Bumblefoot he's a great guy. I've become friends with him over the last couple of years, and he's just the sweetest guy you'd ever meet. And he didn't even hesitate for one second. I asked him to do it, and he was just like, not a problem. And I had it in 10 seconds. And this song is a special song to me, for sure. Definitely. It definitely encompasses my life, you know. Lyrically.
Awesome. Well, Russ, it's been a pleasure talking with you tonight, man. And keep in touch, man. Best of luck to you. And I look forward to chatting with you again. And we close out tonight with Russ Dwarf, Drifting Back, here on Revelator.
When I was a young boy, I was crazy just like you. But I was a shy boy, yeah. I didn't know what to do. Many times desperate, couldn't settle near a bar, but I got over it, yeah. The answer's in the stars, yeah. Now I am older, hard times come and go, yeah. Future looks bright now, yeah. And as the years roll,
Is Drifting Back here on Revelator with Russ Dwarf off his album Wireless. And again, special thanks to Russ Dwarf for coming on tonight on Revelator. For more information about Russ and what he's going, what he's up to, head on over to omnes.tv. That's omnes.tv. Click on Revelator episode number 13. And coming up in just moments, we have Thomas Flowers from Oleander. But first, let's take a listen to their first single off their new album titled Something Beautiful, the title track, which is also Something Beautiful. Check it out here on Revelator. Something Beautiful here on Revelator. That is the new single, Something Beautiful. And joining me at this point in time is Thomas Flowers from Oleander. Thomas, what's going on, brother?
Well, I am currently sitting in my very fancy house in Mission Viejo, talking to you on Skype. Couldn't get any better than this.
Awesome, man. Well, I know it's been 10 years since your first studio release album as the band Oleander. Again, appreciate you taking the time out tonight. I got to ask, man, what was the reason for the break and the time off? I mean, you know, was it just kind of like one of those kind of, you know, we're just kind of burnt out from touring and just recording, or was it the high road to Hooters, man?
Well, since you brought that up, I think you're familiar with that story. You know, listen, man, we were going at it really hard for quite some time. We committed ourselves to our career for, you know, about 10 years. We were constantly on the road, constantly writing, constantly recording, and constantly promoting records. So at the time that we stepped away, we were burnt. High Road to Hooters, you know, you never really want to do an interview after consuming copious amounts of Xanax, drinking beer at a Hooters, because only bad things can happen. And that was pretty typical for where I was at toward the end of that run. So, you know, cleaned up my act, went home, got it together. We just needed a break. We got back home, got back to home life, and it was nice. We never broke up as a band. We just decided to take a break from the industry for a second.
No, I think it's well said, man. I mean, you can't go wrong with alcohol, Hooters, and, you know, maybe a couple barbiturates in there, you know what I mean?
So unless you're planning on doing an interview that day or a show.
Yeah,
and then things can go sideways really quickly.
Luckily, I'm sober for tonight's interview, so you're in luck, man.
Yeah, so am I. You are too. Yeah,
awesome, right? But obviously the new album, I think it's a great album, man. I really dig it. It's a rock and roll album. It's everything you would expect from you guys. It's a rock and roll album. It kicks ass.
Would you tell me if you didn't like it? Would you tell me if you didn't like it?
I would. Yeah, no, I would tell you, man.
That's good. That's good, because honesty is the key here, Ryan.
Yeah, no, I agree, man. Let's step into the honest circle.
Yeah, man. Listen, you know, the time off did us well. We felt like we had all the time in the world to record this record. We had zero pressure from outside influences. Both of those things were luxuries that we hadn't afforded ourselves in quite some time. There's an old saying, you've got your whole life to write your first record. And from that point on, literally, you know, you're on a treadmill. When we stepped off that treadmill, we were building on life experiences that we drew upon, you know, for this album. And I think that that's a testament to why it sounds as good as it does. It certainly has, you know, every aspect of what we've been going through in our lives over the last, you know, say 8-9 years. If you want to know what we've been up to, it's all there in black and white, man.
No, I think that's well said, man. I mean, obviously, you know, you're going to have a lot of material and a lot of ideas. Obviously, you probably didn't quit writing or quit playing guitar and, you know, quit playing music,
in fact,
you know.
In fact, you know, we played our last show, quote unquote, in Sacramento, and about 2 weeks later, we were already sharing song ideas. So I think that we were just taking a break from the grind.
No, when you went into the studio to record Something Beautiful, I mean, obviously, you know, kind of taking a step back, looking at the industry and how it's changed dramatically, especially in just, you know, a short amount of time, and it's ever changing now. What was the vibe going in? I mean, was it kind of one of those like, all right, well, here we are? Was it kind of like, you know, you never dropped a beat? I mean, it was just like, let's do this. No, you know, this is the songs we want to do, or?
It was like old times, only happier and healthier, you know? Again, the time off did us well. There was an excitement in the band room when we got back together. Within the first 15 minutes, we'd written Daylight, which is one of my favorite songs off the new album. We knew there was something bigger than any one of us going on, and we just decided to run with it. It was definitely time for us to get back together and start working on new material. And once we started doing that, it was fairly obvious that we were onto something really special.
Very cool, man. Now, obviously, you know, getting in the studio when you put this together, I mean, is obviously, you know, with the experience of doing other records and having that break off, that just kind of, you know, being refreshed and kind of maybe, you know, just in a better place, both, you know, professionally and personally. I mean,
yeah.
What is the difference from when you first recorded, you know, February Sun to where you guys are now? I mean, is there, you know, was that something that just kind of was just naturally going to go in there, like the vibe? You already kind of have a feel of what Doug and those guys really want to do, and it just, you know, was just kind of a natural process, kind of organic, like?
Yeah, it was very organic. It was very natural. I mean, think about it. When we recorded February Sun, we were kids who happened to write a really good album. And, you know, and on that album was, you know, something that connected with audiences across the world with Why I'm Here. Fast forward, 15 years, and you've got a well-seasoned band, a group of friends that that you know what they're doing when it's go time. And literally stepping back into the band room that first day, it was like old hat. A lot of smiles, a lot of excitement, and a lot of good music.
Well, the album's been out close to 2 months now. I think it's been pretty well received, man. I think people were, it's good. I think it's kind of takes time for people to, to get it out there. It's only been out a couple months. I mean, it's been pushed. People, from what I know, people have heard the album. They like it, man. If they like rock and roll, they're gonna like this album. One of the tracks we're gonna listen to tonight is Bulletproof. And I talked, beforehand. I mean, in your earlier albums, you always had kind of a natural act for kind of painting a picture and telling a story, both, especially lyrically, man. Is that something, do you do a lot of like writing on the side, like poetry and that type of thing on the side too? Or is this kind of one of those, they come to you, hey man, we got this riff or we got this beat or whatever, lyrically, do you take care of most of that, or is that kind of a collaborated effort?
Now, the music is all collaborative. From a lyrical perspective, I've always utilized the platform of songs for, kind of getting things off my chest. Bulletproof, for example, was literally written about me spending time in gridlock on a daily basis on the 405 down here in Southern California. Lacing up the shoes every single day, getting in the car and getting from point A to point B, and realizing, what matters most in my life. And, for me, that's my family and my friends, my wife, my children, my family and my friends. It was just a simplification of how, everything around me is chaotic and complicated. But in that are these moments that provide my life with meaning and give me the energy and the support to get up the next day and continue to do what we do. Bulletproof was an opportunity for me to kind of express that to the ones that I love, and to express some gratitude to them for supporting me every day, no matter what I'm doing.
Well said, man. I'll tell you what, let's take a quick break. We'll jam Bulletproof. We'll come back and chat some more, man. Is that cool?
Yeah, of course.
Right on. This is Oleander Bulletproof here on Revelator.
Thank you.
Oleander with Bulletproof here on Revelator, hanging out with Thomas Flowers from the band Oleander. Now, you guys have been hitting the road, playing a couple kind of, I guess, tune-up shows, I guess you'd call it. You were in Texas. You were at Rock on the Range earlier, middle of May, actually. Kind of my old stomping grounds. I lived in Columbus for a long, long time. Mike is still in the Columbus area. What was it like, you know, obviously playing in front of a huge crowd like that, you know, reconnecting with old friends and meeting new ones, man?
Yeah, it was fantastic. I mean, you know, listen, radio festivals are great for bands because if you're not touring with everyone, you get to see them, you get to catch up, find out how everyone's doing. We got to hang out with Papa Roach, we got to hang out with Buckcherry, we got to hang out with Korn, made some new friends. As far as the performance goes, you know, I never look out to see, you know, how big the crowd is until I hit the stage. And when I walked on stage and I saw about 10,000 people standing in front of us, you know, that was validating. We played one of our best shows and, you know, and it was a big success. I could do that every day, bro.
Yeah, no, I'd imagine so. It's got to be a rush, man. I mean, and I imagine it's pretty cool, you know, obviously mixing in, you know, some of the older tracks with some of the newer tracks. How were, you know, in your opinion, how were the newer songs taken in from the audience, man?
It was great. You know, we generally integrate about 3 to 4 new songs with a headlining set or even an extended set. For that particular show, we integrated 3. Right out of the gate, we played Fight, Something Beautiful, and then down the road, we played Daylight, and it killed. You know, you trust me, you know when an audience isn't digging what you're playing.
Have you ever, I imagine you obviously you've experienced that feeling, you know, I mean, what's that feeling like when you play a new track or, hey, this is, we're going to kind of toy with this and play this and, you know, at False Flies or, you know, what is that feeling like, man? If you can describe it, it's just kind of like.
It's great when they like it, you know, you just have to, navigate your way around it. And when they don't, then you have to get to something that they do. It's just one of those things, man. You have to test out new material. And there's no better litmus test than in front of an audience that hasn't seen you in a while.
Yeah, no, I admit so, man. I mean, obviously, you know, meeting new fans, meeting old fans, you know, that's got to be a kind of a cool experience where people will be like, hey, man, I dig what you guys did, you know, over 10 years ago. And then, you know, obviously making new fans, you know, at the merch, you know, selling T-shirts and stuff. I mean, what is that experience like? You know, you're obviously, you know, interacting at these festivals and stuff with people who are familiar with what you guys had done, and obviously people who really are like, "Oh, you guys must be new." You know what I mean? Like,
well, what we get a kick out of, what we genuinely enjoy is after a show, before, during, and after a show, we get we get to meet as many people as possible. We're one of the most accessible bands you'll ever come out and see. That's kind of the juice for us. You know, as soon as we got done playing the show, we were out in the audience. We were shaking hands. We were signing anything that we could, taking photos. Back in the old days, it was all about us. Now it's all about the fans. You know, it's just when you can make somebody light up and smile because they're getting to meet you. And trust me, they weren't getting to meet some of the other bands that were at the festival. You know, that's a feather in our cap. And it just makes the show a lot more personable.
I agree, man. I think social media, and we've kind of talked about that quite a bit on the show, just, you know, the accessibility of social media. I mean, honestly, me and you probably wouldn't even end up talking if it wasn't for Twitter. That's the beauty of it, really. You know, you may have a different view on it, no, but speaking of accessibility, I'm actually coming over for summer vacation late August. So, you know, nice. If you could, you know.
We'll have to
put a room together for us. You know, I appreciate that, man.
Yeah, man, I'm down with that. Yeah, listen, you know, I would encourage everyone that's listening to follow us and like us on our socials, Twitter at Oleander Band, Facebook at Oleander Band. When you get a hold of us, you've got anything to say, you'll get a response from one of us. It's, again, you know, we've got time. We address every message that we receive. And we enjoy that.
No, you seem like a good dude. We've had the luxury of chatting a few times, man. So you seem like a really cool dude, pretty genuine. But I want to get into
I'm pretty genuine, like you said.
Yeah, no, I think you are, man. You seem like a cool dude, and you know, it seemed like, you know, I don't know if I would go drink some beer anytime, man. But you guys have some shows coming up with Three Doors Down and Daughtry. You guys be playing, you know, you guys have a couple Ohio shows in there as well. Really good bill to be on. I mean, you know, Daughtry, Three Doors Down, that's going to be a pretty good show. Tell me about, you know, obviously, you know, some of the dates and what you can share with us about that, man.
Yeah, well, that came about, you know, we're friends. We've toured with Three Doors Down in the past. And I got a message from Daughtry a while back. He invited my wife and I to come out to a show at the Honda Center here in Orange County. It was nice, a date night for us. We got to go out, see our friends. You know, there's mutual admiration, let's just say. He's a big fan of Oleander, and obviously we're a big fan of his. Sweetheart of a guy. We got to talking. He found out that the new album was coming out, and both Three Doors Down and Daughtry were jazzed about the opportunity to have us on the road with them. So it's going to be a big rock show every single night. It's going to be a family affair, and everybody that makes it is going to be treated to one hell of a show.
Awesome. Yeah, no doubt, man. I imagine that's going to be pretty entertaining. Now, any room for future shows down the road, or is that just something you guys are kind of fielding opportunities at this point for maybe a summer or fall kind of thing?
Yeah. We're going to be busy. We're going to be very busy this year. Management right now is working in tandem with our booking agent. They're putting together some headlining shows. They're putting together some touring opportunities as well. So right now, Daughtry and Three Doors Down is what's up. What's around the corner, we'll announce on our socials once everything's confirmed.
Right on. Well, definitely keep us in the loop as far as that is concerned, man. Now I got to ask you, you got to get doing the old school, you know, packing up in the truck and, you know, in the van and, you know, hitting show to show to show. What is the things that you miss most about the road and the things that you enjoy most about the road, man?
Well, this, you know, we are in a van now. We chose to be in a van, and it's actually the best way to see it's the best way to see the country, honestly. I mean, when you're in a bus, you're driving at night, you're sleeping, you don't see anything. You get to a city, you get out in the morning, and that's pretty much it. Right now, it's old school. We throw and go, and, you know, there's an old saying, when you're on the road, you miss home. When you're at home, you miss the road. That's true. Nothing more true.
Well, cool, man. I'm glad, you know, you guys are out there, you know, really. I mean, it's kind of the old school way to do it, man. We come across a lot of bands week in and week out that are, you know, kind of out there, you know, doing it the old school fashion way and out there rolling in the dirt, putting work in. So I really appreciate, you know, it's got to be tough, man. It's not easy, but it's got to be fun at the same time. So,
yeah, man, absolutely. And when you've got as great of an album as this is, it's, you know, it's a no brainer, right?
No, I agree, man. I think that I'm not just washing your balls, man. But no, man. I've been a fan of you guys for a long time, and it's actually been a pleasure to speak with you tonight, and you know, talking with you on the phone here and there. You know, getting this thing worked out, and I appreciate you taking the time out. And we close out tonight, man, with Never Too Late again. Another one of those songs where I think lyrically you just have a way of kind of painting a picture, man. Talk to me about this track, and if people want to find out more about you and how they can get the album, Something Beautiful, man.
All right, so this is definitely going to be the next single off the album. I think it was the second song that we had written. I mean, it says it all. It's never too late. You know, surrounded by challenges and opportunities to overcome those challenges, and that's what this song's all about.
Very cool. And as far as people, you know, obviously the album's on iTunes.
It's on iTunes. You can also go to our website, www.oleander.net. You can pick up a physical copy. Plus, we have packages where individuals can buy CDs, T-shirts, back catalogs. You can also get a hold of us, like I said, at Facebook at oleander.net and Twitter at oleander.net. We'll direct you to the album.
Wonderful. Wait, Thomas, been a pleasure chatting with you, man. Don't be a stranger, and hopefully we chat again, man.
Yeah, let's circle back to each other soon.
Yeah, definitely, man. Thomas Flowers, Oleander, appreciate your time. Let's close out tonight with Never Too Late.
Brake lights on the road ahead of me. I woke up in a state of mind. Long for something I can't find. Look at my life and tell me what you see. Stretch myself beyond belief. Just a well-intentioned liar and a thief.
Bender, Never Too Late, here on Revelator. Really dig that track right there, and I'm glad that's going to be the next single. Thanks to Oleander and Thomas Flowers for coming on Revelator tonight. If you want to find out more about what Oleander and Thomas Flowers and those guys are up to as far as touring information, so on and so forth, head on over to omnes.tv. That's omnes.tv. Click on Revelator, episode number 13. And I hope you enjoyed our double feature tonight, Russ Dwarf, Thomas Flowers from Oleander. It doesn't get much better than that. It's definitely a kick-ass rock show. Hopefully you enjoyed it as much as I did. Seems harder to enjoy the finer things in life. Until next time, do so, everybody.
This was episode 13, Killer Dwarf Tossing and Oleander. For show notes or links to topics discussed on this episode of Revelator, or to experience previous episodes, head on over to omnes.tv, that's omnes.tv, and click on Revelator. Thanks for listening.